Good morning and welcome to the Preventing Grace podcast for September 11th. So, this is a day that many people remember because it's historically important in the short-term sense. It's the one year, it was the one,
sparked a war that's going on still.
It was our 1 month anniversary.
Yep, we've been married it.
We've been married 1 month, and we were driving downtown to go downtown DC to go to a class.
Right, we come back from our wedding. Class started like 2 weeks after that, and then
we didn't turn on the news or anything. We just got in the car and started to drive downtown, and we were pushed off of the freeway. Well, it seemed like multiple bombings and explosions were going on, but it was only aftershocks of the bombing of the Pentagon.
Yeah.
So we circled
around. We were really
around.
Close to it. We were really, like almost right there.
Watched TV for the whole day instead of going to class. Nobody went to class.
Right. And then there was a chapel service. Was it that night there was a chapel service?
I think so.
And everyone was upset because the Episcopal Church seminary community chose September 11th to fight about whether the right vestments were worn on.
Should you wear the white surplice over your black cassock
when you're doing
a service of mourning and grief? Because the two
people
doing
were really
the
upset
service,
about it too. They were like genuinely offended that he didn't put a white whatever over his black whatever.
I had been kind of like beginning to check out emotionally or intellectually from seminary for some time.
Yeah, and that was
but
just
that
the last
was
straw.
The thing at that point that I was like, I'm just counting the days down now.
Yeah, let's get out of here as fast as we can.
So, yes, that was a interesting day.
And it came right. I mean, within the next month, I was discharged from the National Guard because of, well, honorably discharged, not kicked out, but
yeah,
because my time was up. And
you fretted about whether to get out or not.
Yeah, because I figured that we were going to
go to war.
And we did. And both two units that I served in went over.
But I...
next year, so...
The reason that you didn't go back in was because you really, really wanted to be a pastor. And you would not have been able to
do it.
Keep the church going with 1 month off or going away for 10 months or something.
Yeah, it would be. And if I got deployed, which looked...
Yeah, you would have... I was relieved and happy that you didn't re-up. So, that was a long time ago. Mm-hmm. I always think in my mind like that it was last year, but I guess it was 16.
Our kids have no memory of it because...
They were all born afterwards. But it's 16 years, right?
Right.
After that. So that's a long time. What's weird to me is that it's not... Because it sticks out in my mind as something that just happened yesterday... I do always think, well, that's a day that no work, we shouldn't have Labor Day off. We should have the anniversary of this day off.
Right.
But, the world goes on, and so our online classes start today. So for the last month, I've had conflicted feelings about the fact that the start date for something was this day.
You've been incredibly stressed about school starting.
Yeah, I'm stressed. I'm not supposed to be stressed. I'm supposed to cast all my cares upon the Lord because he cares for me. So I also feel guilty about
the stress.
Well,
you should. That's good. That's what you do. Because the Lord commands you.
Yes.
Do not worry about
anything.
Don't
worry. So if you
are
worrying...
Don't worry about tomorrow.
You're also sinning.
Yeah.
You're worrying and sinning. That is the vortex in which I live currently. I don't know why you're laughing, because millions of Americans
I just
join
think it's
me
fun.
In
Remember
this.
We talked about this at the school thing we did. That was a big...
Yeah, because the Bible commands you not to worry.
Right. So...
I have a child who wants to ask a question.
Right.
What do you want to know? Just start in the book and read all the way through lesson one. It's very hard to do school on Monday it's like a...
Because it's our traditional day off.
It's our traditional day off, so everybody is so discombobulated. Normally, everybody's plugged into all the computers around here.
Yeah.
And watching Minecraft videos. not actually playing Minecraft, which right. seems boring enough, but watching other people play Minecraft, which I can't even fathom. And so they have willingly and pretty cheerfully foregone a whole day of being plugged in because we didn't replace it with another day.
Nope.
So nobody's complaining, but nobody knows what to do.
Right.
One child just took a long shower and sort of this, like, I don't know what to do with myself kind of way. So, yeah, well, what did you say to the students? I can't even remember. If you're worrying...
Well, I said, because, yes, it's a command, guilty. So what does the law do? It tells you that you're weak. And you can't do what the law says to do.
Yeah, well, I know that. So you need
Jesus, right? So instead of piling on the guilt, why don't you just go to Jesus and say, I can't do this.
Yeah, because that's kind of stressful, too.
What?
Like, facing down your own weakness by actually praying about it is its own particular stress. So I prefer, when I'm really stressed, to avoid... any kind of prayerful contact with the Almighty. Because it just reemphasizes to me how weak I am. And
right.
That's already pathetic enough. So I don't need more. I don't need to be reminded. So, yeah, I've been trying not to pray for a while.
Well, that's wise.
What are you watching?
I'm just never mind this art thing going on here.
On Facebook.
Right. Well, you do bind yourself up in like, and.
I don't know, though. Couldn't we talk about some sin that you have?
No, I like.
What do you do that's really dysfunctional?
I don't think I have too many sins. I think I'm fairly righteous in all that I do and say.
So wait, the worry thing is big because somebody else said to me, well. No, this is really true. This is something that Christians do. Don't worry, you know, because you have Jesus. So
you don't need to worry.
So stop worrying. Stop it.
Right.
Stop it.
But then, see, I think we're misinterpreting what worry is, because remember Jesus went into the Garden of Gethsemane and he was, you know, he seemed to be quite worried about...
He was worried.
And he was a perfect man, so...
He was anxious.
He was anxious.
He didn't want to face the future.
Yes, he didn't want... I mean, he didn't want to be crucified and have the wrath of God poured out on him, which totally reasonable. And
why not? You should just want everything that God gives you. Like, all the things that God gives, you should want them. You should feel a feeling of desire for all the things. So all the things that happened to Job, he should have been counting it all joy
when
all of his... You know, children were killed.
That's one of the things I hate
all
most
joy
about evangelical.
When you face trials of any kind.
Right. That's one thing I hate most about evangelical culture is this need to gin up emotions, or at least pretend you're ginning up emotions. So you have the happy, 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 happy in Jesus all the time because my little light is shining in my heart. And it's just so, it's a lie. I even think there are people who are thinking they're doing that. I mean, they're really being good Christians because they can gin up the happy face and the...
Even if they're, or they've deluded, you're saying that they delude themselves. Like they can, even convince themselves that they feel happy.
Yeah, they do everything they can to make themselves feel happy, and then they think that's being joyous in the Lord. Mm. And we talked about the difference between joy and happiness. We looked at what Jesus did in the garden. We looked at...
So I afternoon, I listened to this interesting thing accidentally on YouTube. I can't find it again. It wasn't a Christian, but it was somebody wrote a book. I'm going to just, I wasn't really paying attention and said that Americans have confused happiness with pleasure. And the way that he defined happiness was actually more like joy. It wasn't,
he was talking about joy.
Yeah. The qualities that it had, I would have called that joy, but he used the word happiness.
Okay.
And then he said that pleasure, but happiness, Americans have been taught slowly over the last 50 years to confuse pleasure with happiness, which pleasure to me seems more like happiness. It's like fleeting, it's in the moment, it's circumstantial, it's often tied to an experience that you're having right then. It's not something that you can reclaim. But because we think that pleasure is actually happiness, it's fueling our addiction culture. This confusion between the two is fueling not just heroin addiction, but phone addiction and food addiction and alcohol addiction. Every kind of thing that we can, we as a culture are like, but he says it's not just, you know, you shouldn't look down on the people who do heroin, because every single one of us has been sort of taught over the last 50 years that we should be experiencing pleasure, because that is what happiness is. And so, of course, we're all unhappy. We're all miserable.
Because we're not all constantly being... having pleasure.
Yeah, or we have it and then it goes away. I mean, that's right. What pleasure is. It's something that you have for a moment and then goes away. And that confusion is sort of breaking the spirit of America, is what he said. It was kind of dire. But it seemed about right.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, like it wasn't a Christian thought, but it was... if you think that you should be having a good time and you're not having a good time, then that increases your misery in the moment that you're not having a good time.
And yeah.
You know, like if you're...
But then when you start having a good time, you got to keep it going.
Yeah, you got to hang on to it because you know it's about to go away.
Yeah, C.S. Lewis, I think it was in Mere Christianity, where he was talking about, I guess, a strip show or something. And he was saying, you know, men line up to look at women, take off their clothes. And he said, for some reason to us, that doesn't seem as odd. But just imagine, like, he said, imagine, like, everybody in a room and someone brings out a plate of food and just slowly, slowly opens the lid for everyone to look at the food. And we would think that would be a strange society. But you know what? We're right there.
Yeah.
I think people would. Depending on the chef, he would come in to look at the food being slowly revealed. And
I mean, that's,
because in Big Lewis's point was the same, I think you're making, is that we were just
like you've misunderstood the point of the food.
You've misunderstood the point of the body.
Of the body.
The point of the right.
The phone. No, the phone is like a constant striptease. Really, it's like you're always about to see something else that you've been promised is going to be amazing, and then you see it, and then it's. Then you needed another thing. So this guy was saying that it's the confusion between dopamine and serotonin. Like, they both work in your brain, but you confuse, you want, they act similarly. And so you want both of them to happen, but we only are really having one. I think it must have been dopamine that we're, like the Facebook notifications produces this little reward, you know, you get a little cookie in your mind, your hormonal system.
Right.
Every time you look at your, you get a like on Facebook. But that gets into this like cycle of trauma. So I don't, that's not my, I get into a cycle of my negative expectations. So for instance, I know that this is going to be another year where I fail at school. I know that beyond a shadow of a doubt.
No, I do that sometimes because I'm trying to psychologically prepare myself so that I'm not disappointed when I do fail, and that if anything possibly good happens, it's like this, or I can be overjoyed by it.
Yeah.
So I tell myself before every Sunday, no one's going to come to church, and everyone's going to hate the sermon, and I'm going to probably lose people. And then the Sunday when it comes and people actually show up in church and the sermon wasn't as awful as I thought it was going to be, and people come back, wow, look, we're doing okay.
Well, that's why I originally adopted this way of being, is because I believe that. I believe that strongly. The lower your expectations, the better, because you can only go up.
Right.
If so you're already in the pit... You can only go up.
But it seems like it's taken on a different tenor with you. It seems like it's taken on
I've met my own expectations a number of times. I haven't actually climbed out of the pit enough.
Okay.
For that to be a thing.
I don't think that's true. I think you judge your performance and your and the outcome of things far more negatively than is actually the case.
I just think you aren't seeing like reality as it really is. You're just choosing not to see what's right in front of your face. Well. Yeah. So, well, maybe after this week, though, when I don't die because we sign into all our classes. Like, we've already failed to sign into the classes correctly this morning.
Right.
We're missing a couple of them, so.
And you have a speaking engagement on Monday that's also stressing you out.
That's the thing. Yeah. I just want to throw up all the time. I think I'm really, like, ruining the lining of my stomach.
So the worst that could happen is you could totally embarrass yourself.
Yes, that's what I'm saying. And I know that that is... So here's what's happened lately. A couple of times, I write. And some of the people on the internet like my writing. But sometimes what happens is then they meet me in person and they're like,
oh,
so disappointed.
I don't think that's true. I think you read that into people's expressions. You read so much into people's expressions and people's...
So
I was there at both times in which you revealed yourself publicly
to be
no, and let, I thought you did great both times, but you came away.
No, it was really bad. You again, you're not according reality the substance that it actually has. You're misreading everything. So I just I know I feel like I'm about to go be, you know, crucified with Jesus on the cross.
Right.
So it's making me hard to think about other things. Like I'm backed up on email. I can't look at my talk either.
I know.
But I can't look at it again because it makes me want to throw up. So I think I'm just not going to look at it. I'm going to just pretend that.
I think you should go and let the Lord lead you. You just show up and say, I asked the Holy Spirit to give me some words today. So whatever comes out of my mouth. It's from the Spirit. And just start waving your arms around.
That's going to be a problem. Like, even if I do prepare a talk, I'm going to start waving my arms. They do that, like, airplane takeoff thing. You do that, too, when you get excited in the pulpit. You start waving your arms in a circle like this. You don't do it anymore because I pointed it out and you stopped. But I haven't stopped because I don't do this very often. So I look like I'm going to take off. Then I start pointing my finger. It's just saying stuff, even if it's not on the page. <'Cause>... So, if you want to witness my public humiliation, you can private message me.
Is it going to be video linked?
No, well, the audio is going to be available.
Oh, okay.
Maybe I'll put it, but I probably...
You're preaching it. You're preaching it.
Yeah, basically. It's speaking. A chapel talk.
It's a chapel talk.
Let's parse.
You're not preaching because,
right, because that's
you're a
wrong.
Woman and you can't do that, but you're giving a talk at Houghton for the chapel.
Yeah.
Right.
Let's not talk about what we really think about it. Why don't you tell us about the... Because we only have five more minutes. Why don't you tell us about... We're not going to talk about women's ordination. Just let's talk about the politics of the statement that the ACNA bishops...
Right, so the ACNA...
So, speaking of expectation, I read that they were going to meet in enclave, and I thought, oh, they're going to get rid of women's...
Conclave.
Whatever. Conclave. Is that like where they do the smoke with the Pope and the stuff?
Well, yeah, that's what the bishop... The cardinals, when they're electing the new... the new guy in the big hat, they get together and wheel and deal, exchange money.
Yeah. I think that's what happened with our bishops. Do you think they were paying each other off?
No,
or they probably were doing like poker chip. I think they played a game of like cards.
Should we allow women to or not?
They just said, you know, whatever the card game comes up with.
I was part of the governance committee that drew up the constitution, and so we had, from the very beginning of the ACNA, we had jurisdiction, we had dioceses that were for women's ordination and dioceses that were against women's ordination, and our task was to find a way to write a constitution that could fit both ways into the confederation. I wouldn't, that's the thing. I've never looked at the ACNA as a church, because even though it says Anglican Church in North America, because we have so many different expressions of Anglicanism, and some of them are mutually exclusive. So it's not a church, it's a confederation. So we had to figure out a constitution for the confederation, the Anglican Confederation in America, that would work and not cause anyone to go off screaming into the night. And the way we did it was to say, all right,
to go off screaming into
right,
the night,
that's no women, no women bishops, but diocese, but the province will not make any law or any canon respecting women's, the ordination of women to the presbyterate, essentially leaving it up to each diocese to make their own minds up. And, you know, I don't know, but there's, I'm wondering what happened within the Reformed Episcopal Church, because most of those guys, it really expected that this is temporary, that agreement was something that was going to be overturned. And so I heard, and there's this rumor, I don't know if it's true or not, but either one of their bishops or some of the bishops told them, oh no, this is just, we're going to get this changed. This is just for right now. When we coming into the ACNA, we're going to make sure that goes away.
So
but
do you
politically,
think to
it's
get,
impossible to make it go away. I don't see how it could go away.
So to get them to come in, do you think somebody might?
I don't know. I don't want to make any. I don't want to monger any rumors, but that seems to be what's happening, because there's so much disappointment when the bishops. I mean, I could have predicted this 8 years ago, before we even had bishops since the ACNA, when they came out and they said, yeah, well, we're going to continue kind of going along where we're going. One interesting thing about the statement was they said that we couldn't find any, we agree that there's no biblical or historic foundation for the ordination of women, and yet we're going to continue to allow it to get. Now, I think what they were trying to say was, we can't force anyone to do it, but nor can we force anyone not to do it. So we're just going to continue with it being kind of ad infra here in the church. But that's totally predictable. Yeah, this was like,
I didn't know that. I wish you'd told me that before, because I was.
I did. You didn't listen to me.
Oh.
I told you this.
I think I was.
It's not going to happen. Look, these guys don't want the church to split up, or the confederation to deconfederate. They want it to stay. So the only way that's going to happen is if they agree to disagree about this. It's this political reality 101. Anyone looking at the situation should have known that this is the way it's going to come out. If you want the ACNA, this is what you have to do. If you don't want the ACNA, that's fine. If we all want to split up and be different, our own little Anglican diocese, that's fine. But this is the only way it works. I personally don't agree with it. I think I'm personally, I'm in a different place than our bishops are about that. I think they should have done something, but to bring it slowly, gradually to an end. But they, that's that. But I knew they weren't going to do that, and I'm content with that. I'm happy to be in the ACNA. I have no problem. But there are people out there who are just terribly enraged, and
that they didn't get rid of it.
That they didn't get rid of it. Oh, and there's on the other side. Why they didn't get rid of it? Because on the other side, there are people who are terribly enraged that they said anything along the lines that they said. Like Bishop Todd Hunter released a statement to his diocese, the diocese for his. I'm sorry.
Pull yourself together, man.
The diocese for the sake of others.
Pull yourself together.
I'm sorry. The diocese for the sake of others, in which he said that, you know, this is a great thing we're doing. We're going to continue. Our focus is like a laser on mission, and we're going to continue to ordain women, and we're going to continue on that mission.
Was he upset by the statement?
I think he sounded a little defensive about it, like he was upset by it, but I don't know what
that they weren't full throated in support of.
Right, right.
Okay.
And one of the biggest dioceses in, or most powerful dioceses in the ACNA, now two of them, but the most powerful, I think, is the Diocese of Mid-Atlantic. You have Truro in there, you have you have the Falls Church, you have apostles, you have very large, wealthy churches there, and that diocese is not just allowing women's ordination, but Bishop Guernsey, who's the head of that diocese, is very much for it. So you're not going to get rid of it. It's just not going to happen. I think the majority of the bishops are against it, but a small majority, but the larger and more powerful dioceses are for it. So that's the problem politically.
That's really interesting. Mm-hmm. I mean, as you were talking, thinking of another time when a group of people got together and agreed to disagree, and it ended up in a pretty bloody and horrible war.
Which time?
Like, America. It was written into the Constitution that we would agree to disagree.
About the whole slavery thing?
Yeah.
Right, and that was horrific.
So
that was really a bad decision.
I'm saying, what could possibly go wrong?
Yeah, what could possibly go wrong?
I don't think anything can go wrong.
Well, hopefully Anglicans won't take up cudgels and start
against each other.
Well, although, I mean, some of the heat on this particular question is so great that.
So one thing that I like about the idea of a confederation, and I like trying to get along with people who don't completely agree with me on every single point, which I think makes people nervous, because you and I tend to say pretty loudly what we think, what we like, what we believe, and then we don't hedge a lot about what we think and believe in general. But the when you do that, other people who maybe haven't sorted out what they think, or they think something different from you, think that you're necessarily excluding them.
Right.
But what I like about Anglicanism is the core that we do believe in faith in Jesus Christ. You know, we're saved by faith in Jesus Christ. And we are committed to the scripture, even if we cannot agree on how to read it. We do have a very robust sense of adiaphora, in it, which should theoretically match us against the world, which or sort of liberalism that doesn't, you know.
Right.
So Christians trying to get along together, even when they really disagree with each other about big things,
right,
is really important as our numbers decrease, mm-hmm, culturally. Like, trying to get along and make agreement where we can and get along with each other and pray for each other is so important right now.
It is, but there are those, I mean, so I, there are mutually exclusive positions within Anglicanism. So some Anglo-Catholics, for example, do not believe in the five solas.
Yeah.
And I can't be in full fellowship with that, because I think to deny those is to deny the gospel. And I think our articles are pretty clearly articulate the principles underneath all those solas. So I think that's a big problem. I can't really in good faith be with someone in full fellowship who thinks he's a prophet or thinks he's giving me revelation from the Lord that isn't from the open Bible in front of him. So there's the three streams idea, where you have all three different expressions of Anglicanism blending together in one mighty river, flowing through the world. And that doesn't work, because to make that one mighty river, you have to hammer off the edges of and the distinctives of each one of those, or at least of the Anglo-Catholic or the evangelical side. They have to be battered down.
Mm-hmm.
And beaten down into some kind of amorphous shape, and then fit into a charismatic worldview and sent out into one big sludge.
Okay, but so for instance, with the Nashville Statement coming out, you really, really strongly support it, and I basically support it now, especially as more and more people freak out. Really, I'm fine with it now.
You like the reaction that people are having to it, so you
yeah,
sign
so
on to it
I'm
now.
fine with it. But people that I
That makes me so
really,
angry.
people
He's
that I
so mad.
really, really know to be truly Christian, for instance, like Carl Truman and Amy Bird, don't like it at all.
I can't.
Okay, I know,
Don't get me
but like,
started. Don't get me started
oh,
on
I'm
Carl
not
Truman.
getting you started. What I'm
Right.
saying is, I'm not ready to cut them out as not Christian because they don't like the statement. Stop. Stop.
I'm not counting them as non-Christian.
Yeah.
It's just ridiculous.
Okay.
They're
You may.
absurd objections. Did you read Carl Truman's thing?
No, I didn't.
Well, the
It's
statement
in one.
doesn't address the deep psychology of the inner person and the way we've.
Stop being
Oh
sarcastic.
my.
Stop it. Stop
And
it.
I love Carl
Stop.
Truman, but this, what?
That's what
It's a
I'm saying.
statement.
Like, but you love Carl. Like, you know Carl Truman to be a Christian.
Yes, of course.
So
Yeah, and a very
that's
brilliant guy.
really. That's the key. You know, like. I know, for instance, both
Well,
Bishop
the statement doesn't
Guernsey.
address the military
No.
industrial complex of the. I'm sorry.
Stop it.
Going there.
Like, I know the ACNA bishops who profoundly disagree with each other to be Christian.
Right.
They are Christian.
Right.
So,
They're all going to heaven.
you say bitterly, they're all going.
All of their theologies will be there, though.
They're
Some of
all
their
going to be there.
not all of their
Not
theology.
all their
Some of their theology
theology.
is going to be burned off in purgatory.
But that's an Anglican thing, though. I mean, I have Baptist friends who look at me and think, well, how can you possibly get along with people who you really profoundly disagree with? And I think, of course I do. That is the way that it is. We don't cut people out until
Right.
it's really necessary to cut people out. And that did happen to us. We did have to cut ourselves off, but that doesn't mean that we go on doing it, getting into an ever
Well, when we
narrower
have a
and narrower.
biblically grounded reason to cut someone off, then we cut someone off.
But we don't get smaller and smaller
Right.
and more interested in our own purity.
Right.
We vigorously argue with each other, but
Right.
that's not in an effort to purify and smallen the church year after year, which is what
We want to biglia
we want to bigly it. We want to bigly the church.
It'll be huge.
So I have gotten to know people this year, women this year, who I don't agree with theologically, but who have been
Are you telling
really
your
helpful
friends?
to me. My friends. You just stop it with my friends have been super helpful to me.
I'm glad.
And actually, they've given me some space to you, which you don't want me to have, to work out what I really actually do think about women in the church.
You have all the space. I'll give you all the space you want. You have the whole half of the bed here.
That's inappropriate. Speaking of which, that video, that's inappropriate about trying to buy a mattress. That is the best video on the internet. I might link it.
I don't know what you're talking about,
Yeah,
honestly.
I'll let you watch it later.
No, okay, so even in Good Shepherd, we have people. We were talking. We had a couple over yesterday, and they have issues with infant baptism. They're coming from more Baptistic backgrounds, and so and I think they're probably in the majority at Good Shepherd,
Yeah.
because we have a lot of people there who are from basic evangelical backgrounds, and they love the church. They kind of sit through the liturgy. It grows on them like a
Like
disease.
horrible
Right,
fungus moss.
right, right. Right, but they. And every time there's infant baptism, I see people's faces screwed up and.
Contorted in
Yeah,
pain.
what are you doing to that child? but we allow, we our canons, or our canons, our bylaws allow for them to be members.
Yeah, you can join our church without becoming
Becoming an
Anglican
Anglican.
because a lot of people are like viscerally repulsed by our denomination.
Right.
It makes them physically ill to even think about it. And when the service is going on, you can see them wincing. But
What's he doing?
we have so far managed not to chuck over both our denomination and our liturgy. But
Right.
that's what I mean. You week after week stand up, especially in Christian Ed, and take a strong position that you believe, and then people react against it or bash against you, and you converse with them, and we have a body that thinks about things, takes them seriously, but is able to still have Christian fellowship
Right.
even when we don't land on the same side. We've only
I think
had.
there's some even Arminian people at Good Shepherd, which is
What do you
really.
mean you think? Probably like more than half.
No, I wouldn't say more than half. They get, well, they get, I wouldn't say
like
that.
People probably are a lot not, of people
from,
are Calvinists now without knowing it.
Yeah, that's my hope. I don't like to talk about John Calvin from the pulpit. I just preach in a way that's reformed and, well, biblical, I guess.
It's biblical, isn't it?
It is. And then people just become reformed as the Bible does its work.
Yes. We did have one person leave over the question of infant baptism.
Did we? Oh, yeah, we did. A woman.
And it was very strange because she was fine with so many things that I thought. She was Baptist. She came. Mm. She was fine with so many things. And I thought, what? And then when she found out that we would baptize babies, she left the church, which I thought was like, man, you didn't have problems with
she couldn't get anything over, she else. She couldn't get over the fact that we weren't saying, no, we're not saying this saves the baby. We're not saying
yeah,
that.
Yeah, she couldn't understand
and she
that.
She couldn't understand that.
Which we're not saying.
And nothing...
It doesn't save the baby.
Right. The articles think it saves explicitly
the baby,
say...
If you think it saves the baby...
Right.
You...
Yeah.
Are confused. Yeah. Well, now that we're in a good frame of mind to go about this new work day, I think we should carry on because I have to start school now.
Right.
And our children are dancing around outside the door, wondering what to do with themselves.
They think that you should stop your podcast because they're doing their school thing, and you should help them.
I know.
School.
I don't get it. Like, really, what's the most important thing?
Right. It's you being
podcasting.
Heard. It's your self-expression.
Me being me, or me being with them. That's a question that abundantly answers itself. So, well, I will be back next week. Thank you for listening.